This is Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church, having served as pastor here for some 20 wonderful years. And we're continuing our discussion on the third commandment of Moses, given on Mount Sinai. Remember, keep holy the Sabbath day. And then we've kind of added, in order that the Sabbath day can keep us holy, whole, and wholesome. My guest today again is Ron Eldred, who is professor of church history or religion and history, world history at John Paul II Catholic High. Ron has a background in sociology and history and teaching in colleges. And this is our fourth series. And Ron, you might just want to say a word or two how we got to the fourth series, what we've covered already, kind of a little summary to get us into our discussion of the crisis of faith about the Eucharist.
Well, there were two things that we started out to examine. One was the precipitous decline in mass attendance over the last 40 years since the Vatican Council II.
And there are many statistics to demonstrate that, which we talked about in the first program.
We looked at quite a few statistics there to prove that that has happened. And then the other thing was, related to it, is the decline in belief in the real presence.
And the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist.
Yes, in the Eucharist. Okay. And then we also gave some statistics there from some various polls that were taken over the last, 40 years or so. In that regard,
and both these statistics, and we grant these statistics are a little more, a little less, and alike, but they are alarming about the fall off in attendance for either Saturday night or Sunday mass. Not only in the United States, but particularly in the industrialized countries, the old Catholic countries, Ireland, France, Italy, and then a great problem with belief in the real presence of Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. And then you talked about also some of the cultural differences that we live in.
Might say a little bit about the statistics, just a summary real quickly so they can get it back in our mind fresh. In terms of a declining mass attendance, going from, let's say, 1957-58, according to Gallup and Kara polls from Georgetown University, it was around, if I recall right, something like 75%, 74% to be exact, I think.
When we come of down, attendance at mass for Catholics.
And you get down to 2003, it declined to about an average of 41%. Okay. In terms of the real presence, belief in the real presence, that had gone also from about 75% down to only about 30%. Okay. That there were four different categories of belief, only one of which really qualified for a true Catholic belief, and only 70%, and the rest of them, only 30% had the proper belief in transubstantiation, and the other 70% had some other notion that had to do with more symbolic presence of Christ. And then you went on to ask the question there about the reasons for that, and we examined both cultural reasons and sociological reasons. And the cultural reasons had to do with ideologies, ideas such as materialism and secularism and hedonism and that kind of thing. We looked at a couple of others.
Relativism.
Relativism.
There's no real, clear, absolute truth about anything.
Right.
We kind of have to make it up on our own.
Right. And then, of course, speaking sociologically, we were talking about how Catholics over the generations have gone up the social ladder, become middle and upper class. They have acquired more education. They have tend to be urban rather than rural. They tend to very much involved a lot of times with science and technology and several other categories. And all of these things, sociologists will tell you, tend to make people more secular. They tend to make them more this-worldly oriented rather than spiritual or the other world oriented.
I remember quoting that Lutheran pastor who made a statement one time that impressed me so much. He said, the only thing we can't stand as human beings is prosperity. And he was talking from a spiritual viewpoint.
Right. But all those things tend to contribute to prosperity.
Sure. And they're good things in themselves.
Oh, sure they are.
But it was the same problem with the Jewish people. As they prospered, they tended to forget about God, get involved in the idols of the pagans.
When they get to be problems is when they become things in themselves. They become desired for themselves rather than things that can be see God's glory in it or to do for God's glory or for the benefit of mankind. And when it's not done for that, it's only done for me, mine, you know, and that kind of thing, egotistical kind of thing, then that's it's not a good use of...
So we lose what Jesus said, seek first, not second or 12th or 15th, seek first the kingdom of God, then all the other things would come as a matter of course.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you for the little review there. I think we're up now to the crisis of faith that particularly Father John Hardin has made some startling remarks about. And let's just say a little bit about this lack of belief in the true, substantial, what we call the mystery of faith, or the presence of Jesus under the appearances of bread and wine.
Well, first let me say something about Father John Hardin. He was a priest scholar.
A Jesuit?
He's Jesuit. Until his death in 2002, I believe it was 2002, if I recall right, he was one of the world's greatest catechists.
And a catechist is a teacher
Yes.
of how to communicate the faith.
That's correct.
Okay.
In fact, even before our catechism came out, the catechism of the Catholic Church, he had a very fine catechism called the Catholic Catechism. That was the name of it. That was in two versions. There was a rather lengthy version that was just in strict prose, and then there was a an essay form, mm-hmm. and then the mm-hmm. other was a question and answer catechism. But wonderful catechisms, and they're still very readily available and fairly widely used. Not only that, but he wrote numerous articles. I've read dozens of articles of his, and he's written many more. I'm 500 or 600 articles, something like that, in his lifetime.
Wasn't he also a professor of dogmatic?
He taught in a seminary for a long time.
Okay.
He taught Jesuit. Well, they're not all Jesuits, but a lot of the were young Jesuits who were studying
people
to be theologians.
Training for the priesthood.
Yes, he conducted many seminars and conferences and on catechetical and other subjects. He was very active in founding the Real Presence Association, whose goal was to promote Eucharistic adoration and education as well. In fact, he tells us that Pope John Paul II himself gave him direct orders to do everything he could to restore faith in the Real Presence in his country. Otherwise, the Pope said, and I want to quote from the Pope here, at least this is Father Hardin telling us what the Pope told him, quote, I fear for the survival of many of your dioceses in the United States, or in America.
And that was because if we can't restore the traditional, constant teaching of the Church about the real presence of Jesus under the appearances of bread and wine.
It goes back to the Vatican Council, the idea that the Eucharist is the source and summit of our faith. And if anything diminishes the importance of that, then everything else is going to crumble. Everything else is going to fail in some way or another.
I think one of the quotations from a liturgical document was that the Eucharist is the source and the center and the summit of our Christian life and our Christian worship.
Yes.
So it's really the heartbeat of our Catholic faith.
Yes.
Okay, well, what does Father Hardin tell us about this loss of belief in so many Catholics, not just in the United States, but around the world.
Well, Father Harden tells us that the loss of faith is in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist is due to an overall loss of faith.
Or that kind of an emphasis on, as you said earlier, this world, and kind of forgetting about
yes.
the next world, material rather than spiritual realities.
That's correct. He says that faith is something that we believe. He's going to tell us a little bit here about what faith is and what it means to believe. He says that faith is something that we believe on the word of another. That's kind of a definition of faith.
All right.
Something we believe on the word of another.
All right.
He says that it is one thing to believe in what other people tell us and something else to believe in God, what God tells us. To believe in what people tell us, this is called human faith. The theologians would call this human faith.
Okay, we do that constantly.
Yes.
I've never been to Alaska, but I believe that it's up there because a lot of truthful people have told me so.
Society couldn't exist without belief, without
human
people
faith.
Believing what other people tell them based on their experience and what have you. It just simply couldn't exist.
Okay.
To believe in what God has revealed is called divine faith. So what humans tell us, that's human faith, and what God tells us, this is divine faith. And to make sure we understand what Father Harden means here, divine faith is the assent of our intellect to what God has revealed. In other words, his revelation. Not because we understand what God tells us is true, but only because we accept it as true on his authority. He who can neither deceive nor be deceived is sometimes how we put that.
So when we say each Sunday at Mass, I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and all
yes.
the mysteries, the basic mysteries that we've believed since the Council of Nicaea in 325, we're making an act of divine faith.
Right. And there's another series we've been working on apologetics, where we intend to pursue this subject in some detail, what it means to believe, what faith is. How can we know all these things with certainty? They call that certitude. So we won't, you know, go
sure.
any deeper in that subject right at this time.
Well, you're distinguishing between human faith, I
yes.
believe something because the person is truthful, I can trust them, and divine faith is to believe revelation, not because I fully understand it, but because God has told me.
Sure.
Okay.
According to Father Harden, St. John the Evangelist raised one of the most embarrassing questions in the Bible when he asked, why is it that we are so ready to believe in men, but we're so slow to believe in God? I think he was quoting St. Paul, if I recall right there. But Father Harden says that the answer is painfully obvious. He says that, quote, we are so slow to believe in God because what he demands of us is nothing less than to accept incomprehensible mysteries which are beyond our human capacity, even to conceive before they are revealed, and beyond our grasp to fully penetrate even after they are revealed, end of quote.
Okay, so we're back to the fundamental fact that as Catholics, we are knee-deep, maybe even shoulder-deep in mystery when we're talking about God and his revelation.
In this day of science and technology, people don't like mystery.
Okay.
And that's a kind of a secular part of the being, of the secular mentality.
Yeah, I'm not going to believe it unless I can see it
that's
through a
right.
microscope or a telescope. Okay, well, what else has Father Harden told us about the crisis of faith in the Catholic Church, not only in our country, but in major countries of the world, even particularly Catholic countries?
Well, when he says that the Church is faced with a crisis of faith, he means that we are in a critical period in the Church's life when millions of her faithful are confused about their belief. He says that, let me quote him here, they are uncertain about what as Catholics they are to hold. And as a result, they are emotionally insecure, bewildered, and in Christ's words, wandering as sheep without a shepherd, end of quote.
Okay, now I want you to elucidate that or explain a little more, but isn't this one of the very reasons that Pope John Paul II said we've got to come out with a new catechism to explain the ancient faith in modern terms, because there's so much confusion circulating in the cross currents of the world today?
Yes, certainly.
All right, well, let's go back then to these groups of people that Father Hardin was talking about.
Well, he identifies three different groups. One, they are in open rebellion. One group is in open rebellion against the faith of their fathers. The second group, they're not yet ready to discard the faith. They may still cherish with one part of their being, maybe for emotional or ritual or personal reasons. Sometimes I think of these people sometimes as cultural Catholics.
Okay.
I was born a Catholic, and I think of an extreme example of this would be The Godfather.
Oh.
That's an extreme example. Sure. When you see this movie, you see these people wearing on their sleeve their Catholicism. Even, I think, in Godfather 2, when the baptism was taking place of his child, he had his henchmen out killing people.
Right.
So obviously all of these things were totally against the gospel. But nonetheless, they're cultural. They're cultural
Catholics.
I'm
a cultural Catholic.
Mm-hmm. And then the third group, again, that's an extreme example, of course.
Oh, sure.
A third group of people are not rejecting the faith or in serious doubt about the Catholic doctrine, but they're bewildered, according to Father Hardin. He says that modern popes have addressed in their documents the synonyms for bewilderment that besets millions of still faithful Catholics. He says that they are, quote, confused. This is Father Hardin again.
Okay.
And this comes from a conference speech that he gave
All right. A
number of years ago. Confused and distraught and perplexed and worried, and some are all but crushed by the spectacle of a post-conciliar church that is caught up in an interior convulsion of spirit that has rocked all of the Christendom to its foundations, end of quote.
Wow.
Read some of Benedict XVI's things, and you'll get the same kind of theme as this.
Okay, what a powerful statement. That we're in an interior convulsion of spirit.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we wanted to be careful that we're quoting an eminent authority here.
Mm-hmm.
That this is not just my opinion. This is an opinion of, if you had to pick anybody in the United States, I suppose, or even the world, Father Hardin would be one of the ones that we would select to quote such statements.
I don't know whether we mentioned this before. Wasn't Father Hardin, didn't he say that the Holy Father, Pope John Paul II, the beloved memory, John Paul II the Great, had asked him specifically try and restore faith in the mystery of the Eucharist?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, why does Father Hardin think that such a crisis, as he's describing it, a convulsion of spirit that has rocked the Christendom to its foundations, how does this come about?
Well, he says that there's a crisis of faith in the Catholic Church because there has been an intrusion of alien ideas. He really stresses that, alien ideas. He says that an idea is alien to any religion when it openly contradicts what the religion stands for. And I think he has in mind some of the kind of things that we talked about in one of our earlier sessions. I've read enough of Father Hardin to know that's true.
Okay.
When he talks about such things as hedonism and materialism and relativism and things like that. So that certainly is the kind of things that he has in mind. Among the ideas, alien ideas introduced into the church that he mentions are that God
now kind of go slow on these because I think almost every one of them have been questioned.
Sure.
Since the Vatican Council.
Well, some of the ideas that he mentions is that God is merely finite rather than, infinite.
Okay.
That Jesus is merely human, rather than divine.
That's a strong question in our society.
Well, and you know, of course, that goes all the way back to at least the 4th century, of course, with Arianism. And sometimes they call this Neo-Arianism in some circles, you know.
Okay.
That is the new Arianism.
Okay.
That Jesus is just a human being, you know.
Charismatic, you know? Dramatic, outstanding, wonderful.
Yes.
But he's just a human being.
That the priesthood is not a sacramental ministry. That it's just a more of a just a service kind of agency or position.
Okay, you can kind of come in and out of it.
Yes.
With there's nothing really given to a person in this sacrament of ordination,
right,
that changes them, well, they say ontologically or
right,
actually or really.
No in persona Christi. In other words, the priest okay, doesn't act as Christ. Christ is only a human being anyway, from this perspective, so
okay,
what could the priest do of a supernatural nature anyway?
Okay.
That the priesthood is just a functional ministry. That marriage is desirable. That religious life should be without rules. In other words, a rejection of the evangelical councils, for one thing. And
meaning?
What are poverty, chastity, and obedience, and
okay,
particularly obedience, probably, but chastity,
okay,
all of these things. That Jesus' presence in the Eucharist is merely symbolic,
okay,
and other aberrations.
So he's saying that these are some of the alien, foreign,
yes,
contrary to constant teaching of the Church.
Right.
They've been introduced into our thought patterns,
right,
and the cross currents of discussions.
Right.
Okay.
And these and many other alien ideas appear so plausible, even persuasive, to Catholics because they're usually presented in a manner intended to make them appear orthodox. In fact, if you read some of these theologians that come up with some of these ideas, they use sometimes it's hard to tell what they're really saying sometimes. Some of them are really slick at it. People like Edward Schielebeeks, for example.
Okay.
While people like, that's why Hans Kuhn got in so much trouble, because he just was pretty blatant and pretty open about what he meant. He didn't try to hide his...
But they are very, very articulate.
Yes, all very articulate.
And knowledgeable,
sure,
with great theological backgrounds. And, of course, hasn't almost every heresy or false teaching in the history of the Church come from a priest or a bishop?
Usually, yeah. I can't think of a layman ever generating a heresy.
Well, congratulations to the laity. Okay.
Well, regarding these alien ideas, Father Hardin says, let me quote here again. Quote, either the Catholic Church remains constant in her fundamental articles of faith over the centuries, or she is no longer the Church founded by Christ.
He has a way of making some startling,
yes,
statements. So either the Church has a continuity from the early apostolic times in its teaching, or it isn't the Church that Jesus has his fingerprints on.
Well, he tells us that we're in a crisis of faith and that we need champions of the faith. He really stresses that. We really need champions of the faith to rescue us from the plight that we're in. In this regard, he says, and I think it's worthwhile quoting him from a speech that he gave, quote, no one who knows what the situation is doubts that the Catholic Church is going through a veritable emergency of faith. What is an emergency but a time for urgent decisions, that is, discriminating judgment? What leaders of the Church need to do today is not be shaken by the storm that is raging all around them, but to hold on literally for their dear life to what Christ has revealed, to what has been defended for us by the champions of Orthodoxy. And then he goes on to name a number of these: Athanasius, Augustine, Jerome, and Gregory the Great. Lived out before us by saints and mystics like Benedict and Francis and Ignatius Loyola, like Claire and Margaret Mary and Teresa. I imagine he's talking about Teresa of Avila here. Like Elizabeth Seton, the first American, of course, you know, that American-born, who was canonized a saint, and Thomas More, the great Thomas More. and experienced by us in whatever span of life we have so far lived. And I would add to this, champions of our faith of our own time, such as St. Padre Pio or Blessed Mother Teresa. I think she's been beatified, hasn't she?
Yes.
And Mother Angelica.
Well, pardon me, I don't know if she's been beatified or not.
I thought she had.
Right.
And then certainly Mother Angelica. And John Paul II, and I think Benedict XVI, and I would add Father John Hardin himself to that list.
A stalwart champion of the faith.
Yes.
Okay. Well, how does Father Hardin apply the ideas of this basic rock-bottom crisis of faith that the church is in, and these foreign ideas specifically about the Eucharist? The mystery of faith, as we call it each time we go to Mass.
Well, he says that, tells us that the seat of the crisis in the Roman Catholic Church is the widespread loss of faith in the real presence. He delivered a talk at a conference several years ago where he started by discussing an encyclical Pope Paul VI had written over 30 years previous on the real presence entitled Mysterium Fidei. That translates into English, the mystery of faith. And Father Hardin said that a crisis of faith in the Eucharist among once-believing Catholics had gotten so serious that Pope Paul VI published his encyclical on the real presence during the session of Vatican Council II. Father Hardin tells us that the Pope was concerned that liturgical innovations which the Council had introduced would be positively harmful to the Catholic Church unless the faithful firmly believed and clearly understood the mystery of faith, which is the real presence of Jesus Christ in the Blessed Sacrament.
Okay, so he's saying that the root cause of the confusion in the Church and even people stopping going to Mass so frequently and regularly is this loss of faith in the real presence of Christ. And even during the council, 1962 to 65, he wrote an encyclical on the mystery of faith.
That's correct.
Trying to say, hey, with all the good changes that are coming up in the liturgical documents, we must keep base on the fundamental truth of the real presence of Christ. Okay, can you?
Father Hardin quotes Paul VI from this encyclical. Quote, the fundamental truth about the Eucharist that Christ revealed was what he taught, that which is described in the sixth chapter of St. John's Gospel. Jesus had just fed the multitude, thousands, with five loaves and two fishes. Then he told the multitude that they must be fed not only in body, but also mainly in soul. And that is why he would give his followers nothing less than his own body to eat and blood to drink. Having said this, not only to casual onlookers, but many, the apostles told us, many of his own disciples said to one another, this is intolerable language. Who can believe it?
Okay, now that's a quote from Pope Paul VI, Mysterium Fidei, Mystery of Faith, by Father John Hardin.
What he's talking about here is the famous, the sixth chapter of St. John's Gospel. At some later point in this discussion, we're going to spend a whole session on that sermon because it's so important to
kind of call the Eucharistic chapter.
Eucharistic chapter, yes. So at this point, I think we can leave that, but that's what he's referring to, the sixth chapter of John.
All right, so I hate to break off right now, Ron, but we're getting the signal that we're running out of time. So we'll take up with Father John Hardin and Pope Paul VI encyclical on the mystery of faith in our next session. In the meantime, thanks to all our listeners, and may God bless you always and in always.